You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Now, do you all ever get to physically be in the same space with each other in COVID? Or no, you're waiting until this is over?
I haven't seen Chris in a while. In January, hopefully, we'll be in the same physical space. But I haven't seen Chris.
It's about a year,
in person,
right?
About a year, right, Chris?
Yeah. So last year we did a screening of As an Act of Protest in New York at the People's Forum. And
Chris
came up for that, and then a few months later, you know, COVID hit, and so doing all these Zoom meetings and Zoom calls, and
it's been weird, Tanya.
Yeah,
it's definitely been weird.
So on a scale from 1 to 10, Chris, mm-hmm. first, what is the daily level of concern that you have in order to leave your house every day and come home safely? Scale of 1 to 10.
I would say like 5, 4. Yeah, I'll say five.
How about you, Dennis?
I guess probably now, because it's spiking up again in New York, probably around a 7 or 8. It's getting pretty weird again now, but I have to take a lot of cab Ubers now and things if I have to leave the house. The trains, Tanya, believe it or not, are packed. Okay. You know, the trains are packed, Tanya. Now, you know, that can mean many things, that people got to work. Some people have to work, but Tanya, it's getting bad. So that's where I am. I say, geez, yeah, my concern is going up again, because now I realize, damn, you know, we're heading into the fall and, you know, the winter, the season, it's already getting cold in New York, and the train
and COVID is already spiking.
I can't, I mean.
So I believe the second civil war has already begun, that MSM hasn't claimed it, but I believe the shots have already been fired and it's done. What are your thoughts about that?
I'll go first. I think it has. I'm actually been filming.
Yeah, we've been in it. Yeah,
I've been filming.
Chris been literally filming it.
Yeah, I've been filming some stuff for Wilmington on Fire Chapter 2, and it's really a look at Wilmington, you know, over 100 years later, and just the folks in Wilmington who are trying to reverse those effects of the 1898 massacre. And I went to a Trump rally last month. They had a Trump rally in Wilmington. I said, you know, let me go out here and do some filming and just see what the deal is.
Oh Lord!
Yeah, me and my camera guy, we went there. Because, like, Trump came to town, he came to Wilmington because
you need to send some of the photos.
Yeah, they named Wilmington like a World War II city or something like that. So he had to come to speak. And so they had this big Trump rally. You know, his supporters were out there, thousands of people. First of all, no one had any mask on but me and my camera guy, right? Just the energy out there and stuff and the excitement for this guy. And we interviewed like 10 people. There was one brother out there we interviewed. So
what did he say?
He was like, he doesn't see racism. He was raised by a white man. He don't know what people are talking about. And Trump is the best president we've ever had. That's what he said. Other people were just saying that Trump is the best president ever. He's shaking up the system. He's for the little guy. The liberal media is making up everything. It was wild. You know, and really, but it scared me because of the amount of some people that support him. It's just like a hidden support. I even have people in my own family, like four of my uncles, they support him, and they brothers. And it's like,
why?
Yeah. This is what they say. Now they said they're tired of the left. They're tired of the liberal agenda.
See, this is the problem.
And they just feel like they just want to just buck the system and break the whole. You got a lot of people that just want to just the whole system to fail and collapse. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and they feel like that's the best way to start everything.
Mm-hmm,
over. Mm-hmm. And so Trump, that's what scares me, because he has a lot of hidden support. Because see, a lot of folks
are right.
scared to say they support him.
Right. You know, I agree.
Booth,
with you.
When exactly. they get in the voting booth, they're going to probably vote for him. And that's what really scares me, just going.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that's what really scares me. And yeah, it's something really going on right now. And I think
we're
going to start seeing more right after this election.
Definitely. I agree with you. I agree with you, Chris.
I agree with you as well.
Yep.
I agree with you as well.
Yep.
And I don't know if you guys have watched some of these documentaries, The Social Dilemma or Agents of Chaos, which really talk about how this algorithm in the social media is feeding people very specifically designed and delivered doses of messages to get them to believe the things you say that they're believing.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, I heard about that film, The Social Dilemma. I got to check it out. But you're right on the money with it. Like I said, like even my own uncles that talk this stuff. And I'm like, man, where do you hear this from? You know? And then so, you know, they're hearing it from everywhere, like, you know, Facebook, you know, they have those little clickbait articles, you know, those click on it and, you know, they just tell you. But it's very similar to what happened in 1898, because even the media back then, the newspapers, they use those same tricks, because a lot of people were illiterate back then. And so what the newspaper guys would do, they'll create these fake news headlines to make it, you know, to scare
people. Even back then. Right.
They were doing it back then with the clickbait articles. And even the one guy who owned the Raleigh News and Observer, who was the biggest newspaper in North Carolina back then, he even admitted later on in life before he died that a lot of stuff he put out there, he just made it up because he was trying to sell papers and also promote the white supremacy agenda that led to the 1898 massacre. Right. So it's like, and that's why I like doing documentaries on history, because it's really not just to us to look at history, but to learn from it and learn not to fall for those same mistakes again.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I don't know how we don't fall for them when we all get to curate our own version of reality.
Right, right.
That's the problem. Yeah.
I mean, we can't agree on that's reality right now.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yes. Think about that. Right. That's, And that way, they've already won, whoever that is, the empire, whatever you want to say. But and that makes me, that gives me great anxiety, just from what you said. Because that's really the problem. And you can't even argue with people intelligently about that.
And I also wonder, so when the system is broken and there's nothing, is everybody just going to be happy that nobody has anything? That, you know, right now we're in a point where we're going into winter. People don't have health care. They don't have unemployment insurance. Yep. They don't have jobs. We're going to see a lot of deaths that will be COVID adjacent because of poverty.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's serious. And I know, you know, anytime, you know, this country goes through, like, you know, hardships or down times, you know, our people take the most of it. You know what I'm saying? And I know when COVID hit a few months right after that, they talked about all the black businesses that were lost.
Yeah.
And then we haven't seen anything yet because it's only going to get worse with businesses, unemployment, and everything. And a lot of times our people usually take the most of it out of all this stuff. Yeah. And it's bad. And that's why I understand why some of our people just won't wake up. You know, I don't get it. But hopefully, you know, us as artists, you know, we have to continue to do what we do. And just try to give our people some type of chance. And I think that's what the commitment, me and Dennis and folks like yourself as well, as artists, to try to do what we can do to open up, you know, the minds of our folks.
How are we going to do it?
Hey, continue to do this media, you know, like your platforms, you know, even though, like when I did Wilmington on Fire, you know, I was just a dude from a small town in North Carolina. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I ain't had no connection to Hollywood, New York, none. You know, from a place called Lawrence.
Exactly, which is good. That's how you really do it. Yeah.
I think we all can just do a little something. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, you know what? I'm not a part of Hollywood. I don't know anyone in Hollywood.
Good for you.
But I think telling this story can help make some type of dent. You know what I'm saying? And I think we all can just do something to keep cracking at that dent of white supremacy in this system. You know, I think a lot of times people feel like if they don't do nothing big scale, or if they're not a LeBron James or Spike Lee or whoever, some big scale person, that they can't really make a difference. But I think, you know, if we just start small, man, it can be making a difference in your own home, your own block, your own neighborhood, you know, and just take it like that. And then it'll just expand and grow. And I think a lot of times our people are always looking for the big, big impact.
Yes, I agree.
If we just keep it small and then just grow it out, I think we'll see a difference. And I think, you know, this local election is really going to be important as well, locally also. And I think we got to really take this local election real serious.
I agree.
And we got to get out and vote. Yeah,
I agree. I read somewhere that the GOP were putting out fake boxes for dropping off ballots. They were only going to keep the ballots that were for 45. They play dirty. They are willing to play dirty. They don't have any shame about playing dirty.
No, they have no shame. They're sociopaths. You're right.
But then the left doesn't meet it. It still thinks that you can play quote unquote fair in a rigged game. And that is what frustrates me.
Exactly.
Right, it does. It frustrates me a lot because it's like, are you guys trying to lose? It's like, are you trying to lose?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like they had the easy win because you had COVID hit, right? And it's like, yo, this is the perfect opportunity to get back on track and win this election all the way through, local level and the presidency. And it's like, I don't get it. It's like, are you trying to lose? You know what I'm saying? That's what it seems like to me. It's like they're trying to lose.
Yeah. That's what it seems like sometimes,
It is.
So what advice each of you, I mean, I have a lot of faith in the young people, and you guys are pretty young compared to me. What advice do you give to the young people that are around you?
Question. Let me go, you got it.
I usually just tell young people now to, first of all, to not second guess any of their own inclinations or their own ideas or their own impulses in terms of what they see and how they feel they should react. I tell a lot of young people too to spend more time if you can. Like, you don't have to know everything, right? Like when I was younger, I remember everyone would say, well, it's impossible for you to know everything. So try to hang out with the people who know all the things you don't. This way you can grow. I mean, you know, what you don't know, someone else will. I do advocate for that tremendously. I mean, I had a wonderful public school arts background. I had some wonderful teachers growing up. And there was always somewhere for me as a young person to go and to get involved. I mean, like at 18, 19, forget about Juilliard, just even other places. I don't know if young people today have that amount of support in the sense of really going off and trying something that's new or fresh. I think there's a lot of talk about, you know, safe spaces now and all this and political correctness and what can't you say and what can you say. I think young people need to get away from all of that and kind of go back a little bit into really what civil rights or human rights is really about. If they want to do that, if they want to get involved in activism, I think they should really kind of go back a little bit and maybe reread your Angela Davis, because the approaches that some of those people took have nothing to do with sitting in a classroom and bemoaning what words are being used in what novel. That really gets my goat. As an artist, that bothers me. I don't really care if a white filmmaker is using black people or not. It's like, I don't care. I don't care. I care what I am doing. I care what Chris is doing. I care what you're doing, Tanya. I think we need to be a little bit more conscientious and give each other a little bit more attention. So I try to tell young people, don't pay so much attention to pop culture. You know, you can watch the Grammys or whatever, or the Oscars, but take it with a grain of salt. Be a little bit more concerned with what the artist next door is doing. That's what I tell young people, because that's your generation. The artists need to kind of reclaim a little bit and take back a little bit of power. I'm very cynical about art in general in the culture, because it's all very corporate. Spike Lee's been around forever, God bless him, but I can't stand him. And it's sad, you know. He's you know, we don't need that, you know. So I really tell a lot of young people to kind of cut the cord a little bit, and in some way, maybe don't care about what came yesterday. Make up something now in the moment, you know. And I mean, it's would be nice to have a new music.
I definitely tell young people we didn't do it, you know, your elders didn't get it all right, so invent something that's never been before.
Just do it. And don't worry about rules so much. There's all this sort of, am I doing it the right way? Is it professional? Or please, you wouldn't have rap, funk, or punk rock if anybody cared about being professional. Don't worry about all that. Find something, you know. So,
but I have to say that I think that the worry about all of that comes from the fact that even as much of an illusion it was when I was growing up, and I'm much older than both of you, that you worked hard, you could be successful. Yes. I think with technology bombarding young people, they know that failure is a greater probability now. Failure even to be able to make a living that can keep a roof over your head is a greater probability now than anything else. I understand. It's taken me time to understand the fear, the concern about getting it right. But the reality is there is no right that's going to guarantee you safety or a good life.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And, you know, I mentor a lot of filmmakers, you know,
Chris
now,
mentors like, half the state of North Carolina, I would say.
You know, I try to do that, and I try to executive produce a lot of, you know, projects as well.
Yep.
And
yep.
I just try to tell them, especially black filmmakers, you know, embrace independence, you know, use it to your advantage, and really learn how to really utilize the internet to your advantage as well. And, you know, start thinking outside the box, you know, it's, you know, and just like there's really not a real way to make a film, you know, you really don't, you can break all the rules to even screen and promote your film as well.
Well, I'm going to hit you up to find out how to do all that.
So, you know, I always try to tell them to really think outside of the system in regards to screening and promoting, you know, your film projects, you know, and hit me up.
That's it. Hit him up. Chris knows all, listen, He's I call Chris, he's like the Roger Corman of the black independent new wave. I'm serious. He knows how to take a dollar and stretch it. He goes for quality. He does not believe in spending excessive amounts of money for nonsense. He's a believer in all the artists he supports. In my 40 years on this planet, I've not had someone like Chris. I wish I knew Chris when I was doing theater, because he's so also invested in all the artists that he works with, which is very rare. And he has an old soul, quite frankly.
So
and that helps.
This, wait,
and,
Chris,
and you need that. And he's a wonder, Tanya, on the internet. I mean, he's a wonder. Innately, though. No one taught this to Chris. Chris innately knows how to use the internet.
It was how I kind of got this way. It was just, like I said, growing up in a small town. And it forced me to, because I wasn't in New York or L.A. or these bigger places. So I said, I got to figure this internet thing out, because I'm in a small market, in a small town. And I just kind of just learned things on my own. You know what I'm saying? Also, just reaching out to folks. You know, like, people would be surprised.
Wonderful at doing, too. He's wonderful.
Yeah, people would be surprised if you just reach out to somebody. All they're going to say is yes.
To you.
Or all they're going to say is yes or no.
It's no.
You know what I'm saying? So I've been fortunate enough to just email folks who worked in Hollywood or eventually worked in Hollywood to get their advice on a lot of things. And there's plenty of podcasts out here, books. They have just a wealth of free information. Some of the stuff you can't use, but some of the stuff you can kind of tailor and adapt to your film or your style of filmmaking. You know what I'm saying? And it's really just a lot of trial and error as well. And it's just really, you just got to just start experimenting around, you know, and really find that audience. And once you find your audience, you just go right to them. And just the success, the luck that I've had over the years with my audience, it's like they're invested, you know, like any project I come out now support, they ride with it, you know, and that's what you want. Cause one guy, Ryan Leslie, he created this app called the Superphone, because he really wanted to connect with his audience. And he tells independent artists, whether they're musicians, filmmakers, tells them all the time. He said, what you need to focus on is getting 1,000 supporters, 1,000 fans that support you to at least spend $10 a month with you, whether it's your film, your music, your merchandise, your shows, or whatever. He said, if you can do that at the minimum, 1,000 people that are going to spend at least $10 a month with you, that's over $120,000 a year. You good. You know what I'm saying? He said, so it's just all a numbers game. And that's what I've been just really striving to strive for, is getting to that number. And if I can do that, you know, I can be really a true, true independent artist. And then a lot of times when you're doing those type
of
numbers,
heard of it before.
That's when Hollywood wants to start playing ball with you somewhat. And you can really do it on your terms when you ain't got to do like no BS or nothing. You know what I'm saying? So I actually use it. Well, the Superphone is pretty much like he started it. When did he start? He started about 6 years ago. And he had it in the beta stage. I don't know what the price is now, because I came in early. It was like me and about a couple hundred other people. The late Nipsey Hussle, he was one of them.
Right.
And it's really a way where it's not your real phone, but it's a phone app that's connected to your cell phone, where you can give people out your phone number and say, hey, if you ever want to hit me up, just send me a text. And a lot of times when you're a so-called celebrity or well-known person, everyone wants to hit up their favorite artist, you know?
Right.
And so once they hit you up through the sale, it sends you another link saying, hey, well, this is Chris Everett. Thanks for reaching out. Put your number in my phone book with this link. The link, you hit the link, you put in your name, your social media, all that stuff. And now you're in my phone book. So like whenever I go to, like Dennis, for example, if he's in my Superphone, he's in New York. So whenever I do a show or something in New York, I can reach out to Dennis personally, send him a text. Hey, what's up, Dennis? This is Chris. I'm showing Wilmington on Fire in New York on October 30th. Here's a link for the tickets. You know, he's a fan, so he's probably going to hit that link. And also, I can track like who all buys what from me.
Who else is doing it, right?
So it gives me a track. I can track all my super fans. So like if Dennis has spent like $200 or $500 this year on me, I can look that up. I got his birthday, so I can send him a special message for his birthday. I can send them like a discount, yeah, all that stuff. So I've been using it for about 5 years now. Like I said, luckily, because I was a fan of Ryan
Leslie. Far anyway. That's
pretty and like intense. I said, I'm always, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I've always, and that's why I said, I always try to stay what's going on. And it was unheard of when he did it 6 years ago. Like I said, Nipsey Hussle, that's when I first heard about Nipsey Hussle was when he had, was doing it. And I said, man, I got to get on to this. You know, then I would tell people about it. They thought I was crazy. I was like, but then one of the main reasons why I did it is when I was doing these screenings for Wilmington on Fire, I was getting like 500 people to 1,000 people to come to the screening. But it was hard to get people email information because you have the sheet out there. Everyone's not going to sign the sign up sheet. Or sometimes you can't even read the handwriting a lot of the time. So I said, you know what? Let me go ahead and get this super phone thing. So I know one screen, I had like 500. And I said, you know, hey, everyone, thanks for coming to the screen tonight. I appreciate it. For a special treat for you coming out to check out the film. Because we had like a free promotional soundtrack that we had out there. And so I pretty much told everybody to text my number and you'll get a free download of the soundtrack. So you can set it up your mass text to go out however you want it. So I set it up for when people sign up through the super phone. They'll get the link to download the soundtrack, plus the link to buy the film as well on DVD, just in case they didn't buy it after the screening. And so that way I was able to get like a whole bunch of email contacts, their cell phones, everything. So whenever I come back to that town or city again, I can just reach out to those same folks, you know, whatever type of event or special we got going on. It's just...
That sounds like a...
It's dope. It's direct to consumer. Right there. It's direct to consumer. Wow. But yeah, we can talk more about it, you know? We'll talk more about it.
I definitely will hit you up about that. So I want to ask you each this question as we wrap up. Can you tell me something that was a real a setback in your life, or you experienced it as that turned out to be a really great thing? That it when it happened, you thought it was a bad thing, but in hindsight, it was a great thing.
Okay. I would say when I got laid off from my job in Atlanta, Georgia in 2010. And I thought, I was like, man, what when I'm gonna be able to do, I got to move back to North Carolina now because I had lost my apartment. And it was just the economy was real tough around that time too. And but the thing is that's when I came up with the idea to do Wilmington on Fire. That's what led me to actually eventually do that film. And the rest is history. So at the time, I thought the end of the world was happening.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Yeah,
of course. And but of course. Eventually, but it turned out to be a huge blessing as well.
Nice.
And you, Dennis?
I would probably say, back of somewhere around the mid '90s, I was suffering terribly from depression, and I'm not ashamed to say that I'm bipolar, so I'm manic depressive. I had spent maybe 2 weeks when I was quite young, maybe 19. God, at Payne Whitney Mental Health Clinic in New York, because they had an arrangement with Juilliard students, so because they were all going crazy. But I thought, wow, I don't know what's happened to me. In going through that though, I kind of did a whole sort of reassessment of myself as a very young artist, and then decided then that I would direct. I knew then that I would probably leave school and form my own theater company. It was weird. It was like even though I was severely, because I just thought it was a clinical depression. And it was a very scary time. It kind of changed my whole outlook for some reason in terms of how I was then approaching everything, hitting that sort of spiritual ground zero, you know, hitting that kind of place. So that was something. Now I look back and I realize, and I've had numerous moments like that in my life, but that was the first time where I thought, okay, that's something now I'm definitely very, very, in a way, lucky to have had. I mean, I appreciate that humbling experience because I never would have had the audacity I think, to have become the artist that I tried to be. So that was it. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you both. Let us know right now, are there any upcoming screenings of Wilmington on Fire or as an act of protest?
Yeah. Well, as an act of protest, that's coming out. People can watch that digitally on Vimeo on demand October 30th. So people can, the whole world can watch it together. October 30th on Vimeo on demand. Yes. Wilmington on Fire. We have a couple of events for that. Quelle TV, we're doing a live stream with Quelle TV on November 10th, the actual anniversary of the 1898 massacre. So we're doing that on Quelle TV. People already have a subscription. Check it out. If you don't have a subscription, you can still sign up at Quelle.tv to check that out November 10th at 7 o'clock. And you can also watch Wilmington on Fire whenever you want on Amazon Prime as well.
I'm going to try to see if we can get this podcast out before that date so people can catch that. I want to thank you, Christopher and Dennis, for spending time with me today. My name is Tanya Pinkins, and you've been listening to You Can't Say That on the Broadway Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Say That, the show where you can. I'm Tanya Pinkins. This is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals. Edited by Derek Gunther. Music by Anthony Norman. Available wherever you get your podcast. And visit me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and let me know what you'd like to hear me talk about. For more information, visit bpn.fm/YCST.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.